Hi, everybody. I'd like to say good morning to you here from Finland. And some of you are really up early. I'm very happy to see you. And well, there's not so many of us this morning, maybe almost a little more than 20, welcoming Anne and Annette and Ecclesia and Diane, Helena, Jean-Pierre, Karen and Karin, Carrie, Lona, Lori, Martha, Michael, Rose, Suzanne, to you, Vanessa, Vera, and Walter. And then Brett and I are here, you know, standing by. This is a little bit different kind of work. You know, to do the triangles work, there's quite a bit of simplicity to it. We have to have a good imagination and open mind, open heart, you know, the ability to visualize and to link with depth of feeling with our fellow triangle workers. So the Tibetan warns us not to oversimplify, but not to complicate, and to do that work every day, we use the great invocation and the power to visualize the network. Maybe we'll do a little bit of that after this more academic work is completed. Well, not completed, okay. It's a 100-page section, and it is deep. As part of our work here in this approach to the science of triangles, we'll also be having Duane Carpenter, I hope, who has a lot of study and understanding behind him about the motion of triangles and other geometrical figures. So hopefully he'll be joining us now and then. These will be occasional webinars. Right now they are scheduled for every other week, and we'll see how we go on that. When the time for the conference comes, we will have to drop off because it's so terribly demanding there. But we will be working on with these occasional webinars, which are of a more academic kind, and hopefully it will fill in some of the background that we all could enrich our understanding of the more practical triangles work we do, because of course we're dealing in this particular section of esoteric astrology, we're dealing with triangles of planets, triangles of stars. We're dealing also with triangles of the great constellations. Now, those are triangles on their own level. But we also have a cross, what can I call it, cross-planar triangles that go from high to low and low to high. So, you know, in it might be included one of the great constellations, then perhaps a star, then perhaps a planet. We'll see some of that taking place, and that's a means of transmission from the very high sources down to levels that we can perhaps begin to access. So, you know, much of what we're going to discuss here is necessarily theoretical. It's been a while since we've been together. You know, the last conference came along, and we intended to pick things up after the conference, but that did not work out. It's been quite a year, and now we are attempting to resume. There are many of our different webinars which are given on an occasional basis. I do hope very soon to re-begin our identification as being, or identify as being, which deals with the great substratum out of which all things arise. So let's just the some 23 of us that are here at the moment, let us simply come together in the silence. And wherever we happen to be in the sense of time and space, you know, geographically, Let's realize that we are, in reality, we are one being with one pervading consciousness. And we hope through alignment with the soul, with the solar angelic infusion into our nature, to touch certain areas of understanding which are normally not part of our daily consideration. So we ask that the soul energies of the higher mental plane touch the personality aura of the group, and especially the mind, which we want to hold steady in the light. And to the extent that the antikarana, the inner organ of light, is functioning, then there will be even a chance to touch the planetary perspective, you know, that leads away into the impersonal worlds. Not even the suprapersonal, which the soul is in a sense, but into the impersonal worlds, where the being involved is our planetary logos in his relation to other logoi and our solar logos and the lords of the constellations, and eventually the three great constellations. So with this upward extension, because that's at least how this section begins, it begins with examination of the triangles, cosmic triangles. We will sound a confirmatory om. We're beginning Science of Triangles number 6. Now, if some of you are interested, I've, you know, in the work that I've done in video commentary for this book, maybe I've gone into greater detail on some of these sections, and that can be found on Makara. And as far as the five programs that we've had up to this point, they can also be found on Makara, and Brett, I think, has given us here in the chat box where you can find these if you're just coming into the program, and it has been a long time anyway. You can go there to Makara and get caught up if you like. My intention in the years ahead is to do these video commentaries on a number of the books straight through. And now we're working together on the Glamour book. Some of you already know that. It's not the same as a video commentary, but it is somewhat like that, and we have opportunity to answer questions and receive your comments. So we've just been looking at here the three types of fire: electric, solar, and fire by friction, and the three aspects of divinity associated with them: the will, love, wisdom, and activity, and the parts of the human being that are associated with these different fires: the monad, the soul, and the personality. And he has interesting words for these three types of fires. Initiatory fire, and one of the things we do know is that the path of probation is ruled very much by the fourth ray and the sixth ray, and the path of discipleship by the third ray and the fifth ray, and the path of initiation by the first and seventh rays. Initiation is very much a first ray matter, and entering into a new field of awareness and of potency. So he calls these initiatory fire, that's electric fire, then qualificatory fire, you know, coining a word there, and it has to do mainly with the seven major qualities of divinity and with the seven rays, which are associated very much with the second aspect at their root and with the Deva kingdom in terms of the relationship between the stranded relationship between things. And then what many of us are passing through, the purificatory fire related to the mind, fire by friction. And you know, what we try to do is to step from off the common cross onto the fixed cross, and many find themselves doing that. And if we're a true disciple, we'll be entering the hall of wisdom and dealing with qualificatory fire, and we'll be dealing with the last three petals of the egoic lotus, the sacrificial petals, because in a way initiation is a process of increasing relinquishment and the giving up of our lesser identifications in favor of greater identifications. You know, when the Christ says, I am the light of the world, we know he has transcended the usual personal and even egoic identifications. So we'll be plunging into these areas according to the point of tension that we can sustain. And this is a very important triangle, as you see. The triangle of the three fires, triangle of the three aspects, triangle of the three periodical vehicles found in man, and then other names for the three fires, giving hints as to their purpose. Now, he says, I point out this triplicity as it is one which is familiar to you and at the same time constitutes a good illustration of a basic law. So now we begin, you know, sort of a vast section here on the triangles of energy, which are constellations. You know, and obviously, this continues, because I'm sure, you know, there are aspects of our galaxy which are in triangular relationship, and there are galaxies that are in triangular relationship, and families of galaxies, and so forth. So it really continues all the way up, so to speak, until we reach the very height of any universe with the three aspects represented in a triangle. Well, about that, you know, philosophically it's interesting, but it's not something we can deal with. I think we pretty well have to stop practically with the three great constellations, namely the Great Bear, the Pleiades, and whatever that intermediate constellation is, sometimes called Sirius, but at other times the Little Bear. Maybe a more complete understanding if we consider it to be the Little Bear with Sirius as the representation of it. Okay, lying behind the many interlocking triangles in our solar system and conditioning them to a very large extent, though today more potentially than expressively, because we're just, you know, starting out in our real awareness of these things, and humanity is not yet receiving fully, and we're on a non-sacred planet of the first initiation, so just the way a disciple of that degree would not receive fully, so our planet does not. Anyway, to a very large extent, are these three energies coming from three major constellations. And there is a lord of each constellation. So there's a great super being, not yet a one about whom naught may be said. It's a constellational lord that works through this aggregation of solar logoi. And we sometimes think, when we look at the constellations, that they are purely a visual factor, but they are not. They are related logoi. And of course, over the years, those who are informed of these things have put a story to them which is related to the function of these aggregated solar logoi. So they are the emanations of the Great Bear from the Pleiades and from Sirius, or, you know, as I say, Sirius is sometimes really a blind for Ursa Minor or the Little Bear. And sometimes Sirius is considered simply a star, and at other times he calls it a constellation because there are other factors associated with Sirius. The Egyptians knew this. My wife, too, is always pointing this out. She has a strong understanding of the Egyptian method of initiation. And, you know, we have Sirius A and we have Sirius B and we might even have a Sirius C. There's some sort of constellating going on in relation to that area. And it's very important how close it is to us and how influential it is upon us, because the Great White Lodge, Greater White Lodge than our own, is found there, and also what is called the Blue Lodge, so connected with Masonry. Excuse me. Early in the morning here. Okay. The energies coming from the Great Bear are related to the will or purpose of the solar logos. Now, that's not an aspect of the solar logos which presently is being strongly emphasized. That comes in the next solar system, when our solar logos will, I believe, have a first-ray personality. And these energies are, to this great being, the solar logos, what the monad is to man. Now, of course, the solar logos has its own monad, but it gives some idea of the status of the Great Bear, considering the solar logos as some kind of personality compared with the monad. So the Great Bear feeds or stimulates the will aspect of the solar logos. The red stuff is what I've written in myself, and the black is what DK has said here. This is a deep mystery, okay, and one which even the highest initiate cannot yet grasp, so we can excuse ourselves for not being able yet quite to grasp this matter. Its sevenfold unified energies pass through Shambhala. Now let's see if I have here from page 50. We do have a connection with the Great Bear. This is esoteric astrology. Aries and Libra are the two signs particularly involved, the first sign and its opposite, and the sun is the distributor, but it's veiling the sacred planet Vulcan, and then we could get into the liberated creative hierarchies as the expression of these great energies. You know, wherever you look, there's going to be triangles, and we just have to try to understand how these energies reach us. So the very first of the super constellations is the Great Bear, having to do with the will. And within the Great Bear, there are divisions of different stars. Each one of them has a connection with the major stars of the Great Bear. I think there may be 140 some stars in that constellation, but there are seven major, excuse me, or maybe we can even consider eight major, because the second star is kind of a dual star. These seven major stars are part of what we call the wagon, or the Dipper, you know, the Big Dipper, a very familiar asterism in our local northern sky. So every one of them, starting from the tail with the first ray and going around and through, is connected with one of the stars, one of the rays, and a source of the rays. And when we look at the triplicity of the Great Bear, we look at what's called the direction towards the pole star. There are stars in alignment. We have Dubai, which is related to Leo, and we have Merak, which is related to Aries, and they point towards the pole star, which we might in some respects consider to be related to the other fire sign, Sagittarius. So within the Big Dipper itself, or within the Great Bear itself, related to the first ray and the will of the Solar Logos, there are also ray divisions and zodiacal divisions. We have also the energies coming from the sun Sirius. Now, this sun is a sacred sun, unlike our solar logos. Not yet, in the category of solar logoi, is our solar logos considered to be sacred, just the way our planet is not yet considered to be sacred, but certainly far more sacred than our planet is. So no evil can appear in the sunshine of the greater sun. So from the point of view of relative evil, Sirius has overcome that, and our solar logos has not. And Sirius is a repository of cosmic mind and is related to the cosmic mental plane, whereas our solar logos is related more to the cosmic astral plane. And we live in a cosmic cosmic emotional system. It's largely Devic, it's astral Buddhic, and our solar logos is not yet a third degree initiate in the logoic cosmic sense, whereas Sirius, I do believe, is. So it's related to the love wisdom aspect, or to the attractive power of the solar logos, to the soul of that great being. So Sirius has a particular effect upon the soul nature of our solar logos and upon the soul nature of all the different planets in our solar system. Now, we might, you know, at this point, think about the rays of this great entity, let's say the Logos of Sirius. For the moment, we'll forget, you know, the constellational aspects and just think about that star for a minute, sometimes called the Blue Star and so forth. It's very similar to Venus. And there is, in our solar system, a particular planet associated with each of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. And I think Sirius is one of those seven solar systems. So when you look at Sirius, its soul ray is very probably the fifth ray of mind and science and practical manas, we might say. And so it is with Venus, a fifth ray soul. When we look at the monadic nature of Sirius, however, which is not so much discussed, it is very similar to Venus. Venus has a sixth ray, second ray monad, so it's a love planet. And the same is, I believe, true for Sirius. It's the loyal dog following the hunter Orion. It's got the sixth ray in it. But it is also, in a very deep sense, the cosmic Christ, or at least our local cosmic Christ. The true cosmic Christ is, well, we can't even think of what that is. That's a, you know, such a vast universal being, but the reflection of that cosmic Christ in our local system is working through Sirius and maybe to an extent through Orion. And that, you know, so the final ray of Sirius is probably the second ray monad. And since all lesser rays, 4, 5, 6, and 7, have to develop into ray 1, 2, or 3, then I would say that although Venus is the home of the planetary, it's the home of the planetary logos of the sixth ray, that's monadically considered, the higher ray there must be the second. So Venus is very much the planet in our solar system that is related to Sirius, just the way Jupiter is related to Orion. And I think these are training planets. You know, when we leave our Earth on one of the various paths, and let's say that the bulk of humanity goes towards Sirius, let's say 80%, 85%, for training in Manus, that we stop at Venus first after we leave our planet and then go on into and towards that great star. So it affects the soul of our solar logos. And since our particular planetary logos is very much for some reason related to Sirius, it very much affects our hierarchies, which are representative of the soul. The spiritual hierarchy is representative of the soul of our planet, the great second ray soul now emerging of our planet. The cosmic soul energy is related to the hierarchy. You have been told that the Great White Lodge on Sirius finds its reflection and a mode of spiritual service and outlet in the Great White Lodge of our planet, the hierarchy. So, you know, and then when we get into the Blue Lodge, you know, there are three orders of lives on Sirius, we are told. And some of you may be Blue Lodge Masons, and you'll realize that there are also three degrees in the Blue Lodge. And Sirius is sometimes called the Blue Star, you know, even though its spectrum is very much sevenfold. This Blue Lodge has a representation as well on our planet. So it's the soul nature of things that is affected by the Sun Sirius, although monastic training is offered there as a preliminary. Okay, then we have the energies coming from the Pleiades, which are pretty much the hub of our local system. You know, like if we look at this particular diagram, I do believe that our local, you know, we can debate this at some point, but I do believe that our local one about whom naught may be said is represented by this green triangle, and includes various systems within it, including the Great Bear here, and including our own solar logos and his system as part of a cosmic logos and so forth. So you can understand that on this map, we are really looking at some pretty big beings here. If every one of these little triangles is a kind of one about whom naught may be said, then one can only imagine what the entire circle is and what this cosmic Parabrahman is. Not as big as a galaxy, I think, but quite a large being. Anyway, we come from the cosmic monadic plane, and this particular chart on page 344, you know, it's a chart which Keith Bailey has colored in here to give the different aspects, you know, an AUM chart then in terms of its colors. It tells us a very big story. So anyway, the Pleiades are the hub of our local system. It says it's an aggregation of seven energies. Well, seven major energies anyway. You know, and we could name the different stars in the Pleiades, plus Atlas and Pleione, who are the parents, which make it ninefold. And number nine, interestingly, is the number associated with the third ray. So it's a very much of a third ray system. Our local one, about whom naught may be said, is quite a third ray system. But cosmic Buddhi is also coming from the Pleiades. So anyway, an aggregation of seven energies which are connected with the active intelligent aspect of logoic expression. It stimulates active intelligence in our solar logos, and it stimulates the planetary logoi, considered as the intelligence aspect. And it influences very much the form side of manifestation. So the Pleiades are the great mother, in a way, far greater than the moon or any lesser aspect. They are the mother aspect, and they're focusing primarily upon humanity. Now, the thing about the Pleiades, you begin to suspect that there are already 800-something stars there, and you begin to think of it as part of the thousand-petaled lotus of this great being that we call our local one, about whom naught may be said. Let's see how many more of these stars we discover, because in a way, each one of them might be considered a petal in the thousand-petaled lotus, which really, you know, doesn't have a thousand petals. It's more like 960 or even 972, depending on whether we count the heart and the head. Okay, so what do we have here? We have so far the Great Bear influencing Shambhala. We have the solar, we have the Sirian system, for whatever it is, a blind, influencing the hierarchy and the soul nature of our solar logos. And we have the Pleiades influencing the active intelligent aspect of our solar logos and our planetary logos. And the active intelligent aspect of our planetary logos is humanity. Okay, I realize all this stuff is pretty cosmic, but this is what the Tibetan has presented us with. And, you know, we're in this context, and to read these things will definitely expand our abstract mind and help us to build the Antikarana. There are various ways of building the Antikarana, and you know, Tibetan has given us a preferred method, but also through mental speculation, through philosophical speculation, and so forth. Relating to astrology and astronomy and the larger system is a third ray method of building the Antikarana, and we're supposed to allow our minds to expand in these directions. So don't feel daunted by all this, you know. I mean, it is daunting, but it's just the beginning. You can only imagine what a planetary logos can grasp, or what a solar logos can grasp, and yet relatively, our solar logos is, when compared with certain greater beings, the Tibetan tells us, just like a crystal. A crystal. And there's probably some beings to which our solar logos is like a molecule or an atom, you see. So we live in a vast universe, which is, which is, you know, tiny compared to absolute infinity. But we allow our mind to expand on these matters. And it will give us a background perspective in all the more practical things that we are doing. Now, connected with this major triangle, he says, and affecting powerfully our solar system, is a triple interrelation of great interest. Now, every time you see the word triple, you know you're dealing with a triangle, or one of the fundamental building blocks of the soul. Basically, you know that we have a, like all other non-sacred planets, we have an etheric body, which is largely a pattern of squares. So the Tibetan told us how an ancient sage, probably Pythagoras or someone like that, taught him how to esoterically bisect the square, I suppose, into two triangles. So The movement from the personality nature of the square to the soul nature of the triangles is something he learned about, and this is something that all of us must do. We must convert our own etheric body into a pattern of triangles. We must eventually, as humanity working in this direction, convert the etheric body of the planet into a pattern of triangles. And we're not there yet, although inwardly we are said to be a sacred planet, which is very interesting. Outwardly, perhaps we are not yet a sacred planet. Okay, so a triple relation of great interest, which has a special and peculiar relation to humanity. This triangle of forces relates one, now this is, you know, what I call a cross-planar triangle. Now, we don't stack them up that way. It's a question of vibratory intensity, but okay, a cross-planar triangle. This triangle of forces relates one of the major constellations, one of the zodiacal signs, and one of the sacred planets within our solar system. Sacred planets, kind of interesting because, you know, down here, I think he includes Pluto. Now, is that a sacred planet? Or is it merely an esoteric planet, as he has definitely said? So there's a little question there. The first triangle is the Pleiades. And then one of the mother signs, Cancer, as Pleiades is the great mother, and Cancer is associated with the care of the elemental nature of man, the form, the mother aspect, and Venus, which is the active, from one perspective, the active intelligence aspect. What's it doing here having to do with intelligence? And what it's doing here is that when animal man was individualized, it was the intervention of Venus working through the Venus parts of our own planetary scheme with its fifth ray soul, which was responsible for bringing in the solar angels who implanted the spark of mind in animal man, or at least stimulated the mental unit to such an intensity that it could function as mind. But very definitely, the solar angel is present within the mind. The solar angel, as the angel of the presence, is present within the mind of man, those who were individualized in that way. Now, some of us maybe have come from the moon chain. You know, a lot of the let's say advanced humanity, those who are, into the mind and into the intellect and all that, they may have been individualized on the moon chain or even in the previous solar system. They too have a solar angel, but the solar angel did not individualize them. The solar angel associated itself, that's the best I can understand it, associated itself with them to carry further the evolutionary process. You know, H.B.B. Blavatsky tells us that we're like hothouse plants, you know, and if we didn't have the solar angel encouraging us and overseeing our evolution, we would be far, far more primitive than even the most primitive men on the planet at this time. So we have a debt of gratitude to the solar angels, which we can barely conceive and which we will conceive further as the majority of us will be trained to be solar angels. So this is all about the intelligence aspect. The Pleiades has the intelligence aspect. It's got a lot of third ray in it, but also second, and because it's really the hub of the wheel, it has some first ray as well. Cancer brings in the third ray and the seventh ray, and Venus, as far as it is active with our humanity, brings in the fifth ray, which accounts for individualization and, the will to rule is with Leo, it has to do with separation. It's another type of will, and it's skipping my mind at the moment. But it does draw a ring pass knot and makes possible the awareness of animal man of a center within him. He becomes an egoic center in his own consciousness eventually. So this is the active intelligence triangle, and it's a big one. You know, obviously it's responsible for real developments here on our planet. And, you know, as a matter of fact, DK says that the first incarnation of animal man as a human being took place in the sign Cancer. So we can see the energies that are behind our incarnational process. All right, let's go on. That's the first triangle. The second triangle, the Great Bear, Aries, and Pluto. And there's another, you know, you can take this even further. Shambhala is connected. Aries, Pluto, Shambhala is another triangle. You know, we can take these four sources. We can take Cancer, Venus, humanity. That's a triangle. And we take here as well Aries, Pluto, and Shambhala. That's another one. Now, this is obviously a first ray triangle. The Great Bear, we've been told, is the great source. It's kind of like the cosmic Manu. And within our local one about whom naught may be said, the Great Bear actually stands for the seven head centers of that great being. Just the way Vulcan, in terms of our little humanity, stands for our seven head centers. Now, Vulcan was associated with it a little earlier in the previous paragraph. You can kind of see that the Great Bear, a very first-ray initiating source, is going to be quite active in preparing men for the first initiation, where both Vulcan and Pluto are pronouncedly active. You know, if you go to page 71 of Esoteric Astrology, it tells you about how Pluto's dragging everything to the surface and Vulcan is impressing the spiritual will upon man. Now, Aries at present is the constellation through which the majority of the first ray comes. Pluto is considered a first ray planet, but since it's, is it a non-sacred planet? Is it a sacred planet? There's a little ambiguity there. It's certainly an esoteric planet, the way it operates. So Pluto may have a first-ray personality. Does it have a first-ray soul? Usually we are not given the rays of the soul of non-sacred planets. But let's just say it's a big source of the first-ray, this esoteric planet. And it is eliminating so many different things, bringing in the new. Aries is bringing in the new age in a certain sense. It's pushing us forward into Aquarius, and the Great Bear is so instrumental as the source of the seven rays from their will aspect. The Pleiades are the source of the seven rays from their intelligence aspect. And what is the source of the seven rays from the love aspect? Is it Sirius, or is it the little bear, perhaps? So all of these 21 potencies have a will aspect, an intelligence aspect, and a love aspect, and great constellations are responsible for delivering to us the seven rays in these various aspects. So this is stimulating Shambhala, and it's stimulating those in whom the divine will is beginning to be active. And, you know, I suppose it's very active beyond the third initiation, or at the third initiation when the monad comes into power. So if we find ourselves building the Antikorana and reaching towards the monad and reaching towards the third initiation, this particular triangle, which eventually will relate us directly to Shambhala, is going to be active. Now, what is the third triangle here? Sirius, Leo, Jupiter. Very interesting. Now, I've already spoken about the fact that essentially, in terms of its monadic nature, Sirius is very much a second ray, sixth ray kind of logos. Leo, of the three fire signs, distributes the second ray. Now, its actual rays are the first and fifth in distribution now, but when you compare it as a fire sign, it's Aries first ray, Leo second ray, Sagittarius third ray. So the consciousness aspect, the love aspect, the love wisdom aspect is particularly associated with Leo. Now, interestingly enough, look at Jupiter. Jupiter has a second ray soul. What its monadic ray may be, we don't know. Maybe the seventh ray, it's ruling ceremonial order, ceremonial practice. And it has, of course, great enthusiasm and uplift. But the second ray is definite when it comes to Jupiter. So we see the second ray line up here, and we see it related to the spiritual hierarchy of our planet. And one of the really interesting things, it's said that the sun rules three times in Leo. It rules in the orthodox sense, it rules in the esoteric sense, and also the hierarchical sense, but it's always veiling something. It's really veiling a planet. So hierarchically, the sun is veiling Uranus. Esoterically, it's veiling Neptune. And there's a, in some of the things the Tibetan says, we get the impression that Jupiter is really the exoteric ruler of Leo, with the sun veiling Jupiter. He doesn't emphasize that so much, but he does bring it out at one point, the association of Jupiter with Leo. And this has to do, of course, with the expansion of consciousness, this particular triangle. So we have three very important triangles here, relating again to humanity, to Shambhala, and to the hierarchy. And those three sources are coming into relationship much more strongly these days. Humanity is approaching Shambhala, Shambhala is approaching hierarchy, hierarchy is approaching Shambhala. If I could go digging for it, I would find that the picture of the three triangles with all those arrows. We're not there yet. But eventually, there will be an interplay between these three centers, the head, heart, and throat center of the planet, in a way. Now, I wonder, he says, if you can grasp, at least partially and symbolically, the fact that these triangles must not be thought of as placed, static, and eternally the same, or even as three-dimensional. They must be regarded as in rapid movement, revolving eternally in space and ceaselessly moving onward, onward, and as a fourth and fifth dimensional extension. Well, I'm not sure we can conceive of fourth and fifth dimension in terms of space, but we can conceive of the fourth and fifth dimension and other dimensions in terms of the planes. So, in a sense, every more elevated plane is a higher dimension, and the logoic plane would be, in a way, the seventh dimension from this perspective, and on and on. So, we have the possibility of many, many dimensions, which are distinctions in vibratory rate and in the kind of experience to which the consciousness will be admitted. And now, I find this a relief when he says this, because, I rack my brain trying to visualize all this. He says there is no way of depicting them or bringing them visually to your attention, for only the inner eye of vision can imagine their progression, position, or appearance. So, when we take that first solar initiation, that's the beginning. It's the third initiation, when the inner eye of vision is really going to become sufficiently functional to visualize something like this, and maybe even not completely. Maybe it's a unifying inner eye that begins to really open at the third degree. So this lies ahead, and the way DK can see these things as a master is not yet available to us, but at least he prevents us from being too concrete. Here's this triangle, and that's it, and so forth. is a constant circulation of energy. These three major triangles are only partially as yet in expression as far as our solar system is concerned, and only one point of the Great Triangle, as for instance one point of the Great Bear, constitutes with Aries a related line of force. Now that's the star, let's see if I can get this correct. Okay, hold on. This is the, only one area is a related line. So this is the star Merik, and it's the pointer which is farthest away from Polaris. The one that is closest to Polaris is Dubay, and it's a Leo star, and it has to do with the personality and with the egotism, but that's the lower way of interpreting it. Merik has more to do with the soul nature, and Leo, interestingly enough, in this case, with the personality nature. So, and I've also offered another possibility here, that the word point may not mean a star. It may, a point of a participant in a triangle may not be the stars, but from another perspective, it may be the star Merik, which is ruled particularly by Aries. So only one point of Aries within itself or within its own range of interplay with Leo and Capricorn is related to Pluto. That's interesting. So we have several stars in the constellation Aries, and only one of the points is related to Pluto in that triangle, Great Bear, Aries, and Pluto. Well, this is very, very intricate, isn't it? You know, and just think what a master has to consider and what a planetary, a globe lord or a chain lord has to consider when bringing in these energies for the evolution of the beings that live within its ring pass knot. Therefore, the entire cosmic web and the solar system is an intricate, constantly moving, interwoven series of triangles wherein each point of a triangle emanates three lines or streams of energy. You know, this whole science of astrology and astronomy is very much connected with the third ray. So the three lines, each point of a triangle emanates three lines or streams of energy, nine in all. It is likewise responsive to and receptive of the energies, likewise triple in nature, which lie within its periphery or sphere of influence and vibratory activity. So we're talking about the emanatory power and receptivity of the points within the triangle. Well, okay, you know, let's be honest about this. This is beyond us to visualize, but we can get some kind of a vague conception which prevents us from concretizing things too absolutely, which maintains a picture of the circulation of energies according to certain numbers within our local solar systemic and cosmic etheric system, and likewise within our own etheric body. So it just sort of wakes us up to the great idea of circulation within the etheric systems in which we live and move and have our being. All right, that should be enough for the moment. It's pretty heady stuff. And let's see if I can... Oh, no, no, no. What I want to do is say that this is the end of our discussion. End of Science of Triangles, number 6. And I don't even know what page we're on here. I guess we're on page 114. Is that it? Maybe not making too much headway. I'll just call it 114. And we will beginning. BGN of Science of Triangles, number 7. Now, as I say, we'll be having Dwayne come in on this program, and these will be occasional. Right now, they're scheduled for every 2 weeks, and we will see whether we can uphold that. Scythe of Trigals, number 7, page 114. And the date on which this would occur would be the 27th of January, it looks like, and also a morning time, and we'll see about that as well. All right, 2018. All right, friends. Well, the subject is a bit overwhelming when you consider these great constellations. They are amazing and great sources, but they are tiny compared with other sources. So we begin to develop a certain sense of relativity when we consider the vast extent of the universe. Now, the astronomers have given us a universe of vast extent, but it's just a drop in the bucket compared with what's really going on subjectively. And we know, although the masters do know, we know little about these great galactic lives. They have named certain galactic lives, and they have a system of classification, we're told, in Cosmic Fire somewhere, about a page 1084, somewhere right in there. But we don't have that. And they know something about those still far greater sources. So we're the tiniest little beings in this great system, but we're on our way up and through and beyond, and eventually we will reclaim our true identity as that which pervades all of manifestation. All right, friends, I guess I've gone on and on a bit, so forgive me for that. And if you have any thoughts about this, any questions about what we may have gone over, or just questions in general about occultism, this would be the time to ask those questions or make those statements before we do a little bit of a meditation on triangles. Okay, so here we have Suzanne, and you can talk, Suzanne. Go ahead. Oh, wait a second. Have I done this incorrectly?
Yes, you unmuted me.
Okay, maybe this is Anne Veronica. Okay.
Yes, it's me, Anne.
Okay, I did something incorrect. But anyway, Anne, you go ahead, and I'll see if Suzanne is there.
I didn't put my hand up. Something must have gone wrong, so I don't have any questions.
Okay, I know. When I read this stuff, I just go, okay. Okay, I will.
No, I love this stuff. I really love this stuff, and I learn a lot of things. So thank you very much for this.
Good. We can only imagine what is in Master DK's mind. He's considered to be the most learned of the masters when it comes to rheology and when it comes to astrology and the knowledge of the creative hierarchies. We can only imagine the thousands of years of study that it took him and deep meditation to come to the point that he is now, and why he even bothers to try to educate people like ourselves and these things who are so far behind in our understanding. But, you know, he knows, and we will get there, and we're very grateful to him. So anyway, we move on. Thanks, Anne. Now, let's see. Was there someone? I thought I was pressing Suzanne, but maybe not. Oh, there we are. What's the matter with me here? Brett, can you help me here and see if we can locate Suzanne? There she is. I got her now. Okay, Suzanne, did you want to say something?
Oh, yes. Can you hear me, Michael?
Yes. Yes, I can.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could expand just a bit on the idea that we are inwardly a sacred planet and outwardly not so. Thank you.
It's a very good question. I don't know if I've given it enough thought. I think it has to do with the development of our soul nature, as a planet, which has not yet sufficiently conditioned the outer vehicles so that the outer vehicles reflect the degree of our development inwardly. Now, you know, there's a problem here because sometimes we're told that a sacred planet has to have taken its fifth initiation. Whoa, now that's a very tall order, because cosmically considered, our planet is now taking a kind of lesser fourth initiation, and it has not yet taken its cosmic second initiation. So it's difficult to know whether to apply that statement to the series of seven initiations or to the usual cosmic initiation. I'll show you where you can find this. If you went, for instance, to this page, page 384 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, here we're talking about the logos of our scheme. Okay, so this is important. I'll tell you what, Suzanne, I'm gonna close your microphone for just a minute because there's a roar going, but you'll be able to hear me. Then I'll open you up again. It says here of our planetary logos that he is in physical incarnation. He is midway through his career upon the cosmic path of initiation, and consequently is to take the fourth initiation in this chain. Well may this globe, therefore, be considered the globe of sorrow and of pain, for through it our planetary logos is undergoing that which the mystic calls the crucifixion. The cells in his body, those cells which he feels and senses and experiences, are in this world period rent by pain and suffering. That's us. We're the cells, okay, among others. For his is the consciousness at the center of the body, and theirs is the capacity to suffer, so that by means of them he may learn the meaning of systemic dispassion, which he doesn't have yet. This is interesting, because from a cosmic perspective, he's only taken one initiation, but from this lesser perspective, he's working on four, on initiation number four. So he's learning the meaning of systemic dispassion, and be dissociated from all forms and material substance, and upon the cross of matter eventually find liberation and the freedom of the spirit. So he is not yet even an initiate of the second degree, cosmically considered, though from a lesser perspective, he's an initiate becoming of the fourth degree, and on our chain and on our fourth globe, we are responding to this kind of lesser crucifixion through which he is passing. And then he says the same can be predicated of the solar logos. And then here are some very interesting, these three sentences. The solar logos has for objective nine initiations, the third cosmic initiation being his goal, which Sirius has taken. Our solar logos is a cosmic initiate along the line of solar logoi of the second degree. Our planetary logos has for objective seven initiations, of which he's undergoing number four in this fourth chain, the second cosmic initiation being his goal. So he's not yet really an initiate of the second degree along the planetary line of development. And then we get down to man, five initiations, and the first cosmic initiation being his goal. The first cosmic initiation is, in a way, the Sirian initiation. It is mastership. So these three, excuse me, these three sentences are very, very important when it comes to tracking where our planetary logos is, where our solar logos is, and they're midway through their system of nine, or midway through their system of seven. Now, my impression, you know, until further corrected, is that when the judgment day comes, perhaps in this chain, in this planetary chain, when the judgment day comes, we will be taking our second cosmic initiation on this planet, and that's a long way ahead. And then everybody who remains with the planet will be on the path, whether, you know, just starting out on the path or an initiate of the sixth or seventh degree. Everyone will be on the path, and those who are sent to other places for too much lower mind or not enough lower mind and so forth, probably sent to Mars or some equivalent, will be learning those things which will put them on the path. So, okay, so that's my view of it. And do you have any further questions on that, Suzanne? I've activated you.
Wow. Thank you. No, thank you. That was very
helpful. It's a good place in cosmic fire where we see where we stand. Now, you know, these are such vast time periods, huge, you know, trillions of years. If the chronology of the Brahmins is correct, and this is what HBB says, how long does our solar system last? Well, it's said to last 311 trillion and 40 billion years, and we're halfway through. So, you know, it's just huge, and it's internal development as well. It's not just an external development. Okay, so these are things to think about, and they expand our mind greatly. We'll do our best with them and try to take them in. Okay, now, friends, are there any further thoughts that you wish to express or questions? You know, not that I can answer all these questions. I can't, but I can give it a try and, you know, perhaps expand the discussion. So is there anything further that you wish to discuss at this point? Anything further? Now, of course, you know, look, excuse me, we have to approach this whole thing in a rather humble manner with a sense of proportion. The Tibetan has asked us to do the triangle's work. And he says it's work that must go on. And, you know, compared to these big speculations that he's given to us, and for him, you know, they also have an element of the theoretical, because as he says, what's going on the cosmic astral plane? He says, I can't tell you. I haven't been there. So he's telling us something about his status, but of course he has the libraries of Shambhala at his, or at least hierarchical libraries at his disposal, and the accuracy of the information that he's giving us is not to be questioned. We are to work with it, you know, as a hypothesis, and that's what we're trying to do here. And one of the things we're doing in a group like this is we're building the Antikarana. We're building the Antikarana via a third ray method, which is associated with astrology and astronomy and with speculation regarding the great relations between things. We're expanding our abstract mind. That's one of the things we're doing here, and we all need it. We all need it, and it will serve us as we go along.
Michael?
Yes, Brett. Yes, Brett.
Suzanne has a written comment.
Okay, a written comment. And who has that?
Suzanne in questions.
Okay. Oh, okay, wait a second. Let me just see here. Uh-huh. Okay. Are you familiar with the work of a group out of Virginia, North Carolina, who published a wonderful publication called The Upper Triad? Yeah, I kind of followed that for a while. At least I was aware of it. Their website still gives free access to highly spiritual articles, which always included articles concerning triangles and based on DK's works, good, among many others. I believe a man formerly with the Arcane School was involved in its organization. Right, highly recommended. So thanks for a reminder on that. Yeah, that's been around for That's been around for quite a while. Now, if we really could understand, there are two, you know, upper triads as far as we have to be concerned. I'll show you what I mean. So here's one triad to define the nature of the spiritual triad, which is in a way a projection of the monad, which is the still higher triad, will, wisdom, and activity. So it is possible for us to be related to one of seven streams, which are monadic. He tells us there are seven great groups on the monadic plane, and we probably relate to one or other of them. And each one of them has will, wisdom, and activity going, so you have a 21-ness going on. But before we get to that, you know, what is the abstract mind? What is buddhi, really? What is pure reason? You know, what is harmony? What is love, wisdom? What is right and exact relationship? And then really, what is spiritual will? And we see it coming from the higher aspect of the monad, from the will aspect of the monad. But if we move along, we do see down here that there are seven monadic possibilities. You'll see this, by the way, in Letters on Occult Meditation about the seven monadic groups. But then Dighia tells us that monadic rays are only three, and I think basically what has to happen there is the monad has to be liberated onto the into the sea of fire as a volatile essence, and it finds its place in either the Father, the Son, or the Holy Spirit. So that's the threefoldness of the upper monad, at least as I understand that. It can be any of the seven here, and only one of the three here. So we have a number of triads which we have to deal with, and the first one, of course, is, well, in a way, it's the soul. You know, the soul is the triangle. We have to understand that. And then the spiritual triad, and then the threefold monad, and then, you know, a kind of triangle which exists on the logoic plane, and then who knows what happens after that. We have a long way to go, obviously. But the great thing about Master DK and the dispensation from hierarchy is it gives us a reliable path to follow. Not glamorous, not filled with illusion, although we have to be careful how we interpret things, but a reliable path which, if rightly pursued, will lead us to our goal and will help us lead other human beings to a goal. So the upper triad, thank you, Suzanne, for reminding on that. I've been kind of looking at that for a long time, but haven't really studied it, their output. Okay, anything else? Because then we'll just have, if there's nothing else right now, we will simply have a little meditation, which is more about triangles. Now, as you know, Tuya, every Wednesday, whether, you know, morning schedule or evening schedule, does the full meditation on triangles with music and the great invocation, all that, which I think, you know, is very worthwhile. This is just little, okay, what I'm going to do now with you all. Whoops, I heard a sound. Okay. Right. Okay. So, first of all, let's envision our planet and the network of triangles which eventually must cover the whole planet. We've been told, you know, that 100,000 triangles would be enough to turn the tide. So So every country, every continent will have its triangles, which we can envision. And then, you know, the entire planet covered by these triangles, especially etherically, with, as it were, the Christ at the very center, radiating out the love and the wisdom and the goodwill, and then the light, and later triangles of spiritual will, of the will to good, will be created later. Now, each one of us is let us assume we have at least one triangle, we should, or maybe a few, or maybe more than a few. But let's think for a few moments in the direction of the people with whom we are participating in the triangles network. So we'll think of our own little network, whether it's one or more. And we'll be, you know, circulating in our little network the energies of light between the points and the energies of goodwill, which is love in action. And we will see our own little efforts, our own little network related to the larger network in process of formation and with a very important destiny related to the three Buddhas of activity. It becomes an emergency network, subjective emergency network, to help in crises. This is a very real, subjective structure. And we have to do our best through our daily remembrances to strengthen it, because it is, as the DK says, a work which must go on. And now let's thinking of our network and the entire network, we will sound the great invocation, seeing these triangles, our own and the network, as fully energized as possible with light, love, and spiritual, sacrificial will. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, if you want the earlier programs, this is number 6, and they're found on Makara. Now, tonight, the evening schedule, Tuya will be offering this emergency work, the Souls of Nations work, and there's plenty going on that needs the intervention of the groups. And we'll also, as we go along, be studying the souls and personalities of various nations as we have before. So thank you for being here and attending this. Now, the next schedule that we have is about 2 weeks from now. And we'll be getting Dwayne Carpenter in here. His knowledge of triangles and of motion in general, you know, it's a third ray thing, is quite profound, and he'll have something to offer us with, he's an artist, you know, and with his illustrations, it will be sure to bring us into a deeper understanding. And do remember the other broadcast that we have with Francis Donald doing the Secret Doctrine every month. That'll go on for a while. And we have Elena Dramcini continuing to work on the disciples, and for the members of the Moria Federation, we have Eva Smith working on some of the fundamental esoteric astrology at this time, and Nicole Reshinichi is working with broadcasts on healing. And let's see, Brett, am I forgetting anyone here that you can think of?
I think you got it.
Have I maybe covered it? So we try to, you know, the teaching goes forth over the radio, says Master DK. Well, we have something now better than the radio, and we try to make it alive and interactive for you. Broadcasts, of course, do not have the interactive capacity, but webinars do, and we offer a mixture of broadcasts and webinars. So I want to thank you very much for attending, for being here, and we will carry on. The next occasion is tonight when we do the Souls of Nations meditation at 5 p.m. GMT. All the best to everybody. Lots of love, many blessings, and we'll see you before long. Okay. Bye-bye.